from 32 to 42 was my biggest change. Like my phrase is like, I was 32 broke and living at my parents' house, 42 owned my own business, have a wife and a kid, and I'm selling millions of dollars of products with my own stuff. So it's just like a 10-year gap. Obviously it was more before that too, but you know, you could have told me at 32, I'm sitting there in the basement at my parents' house, that at 42, I'd be at that position. And obviously, I would have never believed that at all.
Welcome to the Passion Behind the Art Show. It's all about diving in with individuals to learn the story behind their passion. It's your host, Daryl Pinnock.
What's up? Thank you for stopping by. You're in for a treat. Remember to check out my newest project, flyteddy.com. Flyteddy.com. Now, time for this week's episode.
I mean, it's, you know.
All right. I am super excited to have Jimmy Bryant on the Passion Behind the Art Show, Atomic Child. You know, every time, bro, and this has been a while, I've seen this name. I don't know why I think acid. I have no idea.
I mean, it's, you know, it's a completely made up name that I made in my 20s. I definitely never thought I'd be a 44-year-old adult and having to explain to people what 23-year-old Jimmy thought was clever.
So let's jump into that. How did your creative journey start?
The typical answer is I was lucky enough to be a kid that my parents, you know, they let me keep drawing and didn't say no, you know. So a lot of people, you get to a certain age and they just kind of like, hey, you know, maybe you want to pay your bills when you're older, so maybe get a job, you know. But I was lucky enough that my parents always encouraged me to draw and everything. And then as far as any sort of like professional start, after college, I went to college. Went to college in the early 2000s. I graduated by like 2002. So that's a way different college than it is now. You know, we had like two digital classes, Cork Express, you know, all that stuff. But then I just started I got Bachelor in Fine Arts. It was specialty in illustration because, you know, they weren't specifically teaching that. And then I just started thinking that I would get, you know, jobs in newspapers or magazines or whatever, doing editorial illustration. And that's how it began. So that was the painful beginning of many dark years, but that's how it began.
Oh, interesting. So what was kind of like your go-to creative wise as a child?
As far as like, what did I draw?
Or yeah, what did you into? Like? Yeah, what were you into?
So, you know, I was born in 1979, so the 80s were my childhood. You know, all the things that are super nostalgic right now that everybody's tired of hearing about, you know, He-Man, Ninja Turtles, G.I. Joe, those were all the things, you know, wrestling, WWF back then. All that was what was on Saturday mornings. That's what I watched. That's what I was into. By the time I got into high school, by fourth grade, my parents had we had moved off an Air Force base out into a farm, so that was a whole different life. And then by then, I didn't really have a lot of input from anything. We had four channels. One of them was like PBS or whatever, NPR, whatever the public channel is.
Right.
The other two just kind of rotated. So there wasn't a lot of TV to watch. So I really got it from comics, early X-Men. And then, obviously, The Simpsons had just started, and that was a big influence. And then that's, like, all I thought you could do. Like, I was just like, oh, you either draw comics or you animate things. Like, those are the only two things I knew But the only one of the big factors growing up was I had a best friend whose dad is a sculptor still to this day. Mm. And he's a pretty pretty well-known sculptor. He's made his whole life sculpting. So, like, I knew you know, there was a possibility to make money as an artist because he had a house and a family and everything and a studio. So, like, I knew that possibility was there. I just had no idea how to ever get there, you know?
So how did you even go down the editorial road?
I mean, back then, you know, it was still all about calling people and like doing all that when I graduated, but I was like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to like call people. So what I would do is I would, this is the old days. You go to Barnes and Nobles. They'd have a rack of about 500 magazines. You'd open up that magazine and you'd be like, art director, email. And then I just started, you know, once I would get somebody's email, then I would like know the format of their email. And then I would just try to email as many people as possible. So it was just sending out tons of email, going to my really crappy Dreamweaver site that I made back then.
Dreamweaver.
Had like, that was great. What a great program. Macromedia Dreamweaver. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it was just that emailing. You know, a lot of the stuff I got into was just like really tiny magazines, local newspapers, local magazines. I know it's not like a lot today because they all got bought out. But every decent sized city used to have like a local paper.
True.
And those people were hiring artists for every week or month or however many they put it out. But they always needed some kind of internal drawings or for the cover if you got lucky. So I got a little bit of those jobs just to give me a little taste of freelance. And the only reason I went down editorial illustration was because that's what all my professors did in college. Mm. And I knew I didn't want to be solely a graphic designer after taking Cork Express.
Okay. So I'm curious. So have you been like working for yourself your entire time you jumped out of college?
No, no. I was working construction in a construction industry, I should say. We rented out construction equipment, and then that's what I did during college to pay the bills. But I mean, I started, you know, washing dirty construction equipment, then delivering construction equipment. And then I just slowly throughout the years worked there, you know, and I had like a regular 9-to-5 job and a 401k and paid the bills. And like, you know how it is, it's hard to like get out of that life when you have that regular paycheck coming. So I did that for a long, long time. And then I just tried to do freelance after work.
Oh,
basically.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. So what caused the shift in your career? Like, when did Atomic Chalice actually start?
So, I mean, I changed to that name in my like early, probably mid, probably 25, which would have been like 2004 ish. I changed over to that name just because my name is Jimmy Bryant and it's super generic. I mean, if you type in Jimmy Bryant, there's a million Jimmy Bryants. So, like, nobody was finding me. And I think also at that time, like, it was cool to have like a name, like, everybody had like artist names. It's not too big of a deal now, but so yeah, I was doing that, and I guess the biggest change was once I had moved out to California. I had lived in Denver for a long time. Me and my now wife girlfriend that time had moved out to California, and like in the first day I moved there, like I saw a guy painting a mural on the steps by the apartment. We lived in Oakland, and I was just like, I had lived in Denver for probably 10 years at that time. And I was like, I've never seen anybody doing any kind of art, let alone painting murals. So I was just like, okay, so there's definitely a path for art and things to do. So that just kind of, and there was a, I can't remember the name, I wish I could, but there was a skateboard company out there and they shared an office with Juxtapose Magazine.
Okay.
Thrasher Magazine, I think they all shared an office. And like, I tried to get a job like doing illustration for skateboard, but I had never skated in my life. So you can imagine how that interview went. So yeah, there was just like more opportunities. And then I kind of, while I was out there and a little bit before, I started doing van merch design. And that gave me a lot of like projects and jobs. And that was kind of the first time where I was making consistent, steady money doing art. And then that kind of like started leading into a bunch of other things. So I was like, okay, at least like now I know I can make money Now it's like, how do you make more money doing this? And then how do I quit my job?
Okay. So at this point, Atomic Child was basically a design firm, you know, quote unquote.
Yeah. I mean, I did freelance for over 15 years. It was, you know, it was just a side hustle. Basically what I did, not the smartest thing in the world, was we were moving back from California, and I was about to turn 30 or 29 or whatever. And I had worked at this company for 10 years, basically. And I was just like, I can't go, it's like midlife crisis, as I thought at the time. And so I was like, oh, I'm just going to quit that job. I'm getting some sort of regular money making band merch design, which if anybody's ever done that, terrible pay. Still pretty terrible pay to this day. Just a few bands actually pay well. But so I just jumped in when we moved back to Colorado. I was like, okay, I'm just going to quit and I'll start doing art. You know, that was my big plan. I didn't save money or nothing. And that went about as good as you could imagine. That was kind of a slow downturn of like being broke, breaking up with my girlfriend, moving in with my friends, and then being too broke to live with my friends. And then like the only other people who are going to take care of me, my parents. I'm a 32-year-old man at this time. And they're like, well, I guess I'm moving back in with mom and dad because that's my last hope on this one. So I rode that train down, down to the ground. So I moved in with my parents and I just started washing dishes at my buddy's restaurant back home. And that was what I was doing, was washing dishes and living with my parents. And then I wanted to move back to Denver. And, you know, and my girlfriend at the time, my wife, was just like, hey, you got to get a job and pay the bills, you know, big request. So I was like, okay, I'm doing a little bit of band merch design. And I was like, I can probably find an easy dishwashing job there. So I just moved back and I started washing dishes down there to help like make sure I could cover rent. And then I actually went and got an art director job at a place. Okay. So that was kind of the transition, like at 33, 34-ish, where I got like a job doing actual artwork. And I was no longer like, you know, working quote unquote regular 9 to 5.
Okay. So currently it is April 25th, 2023. How do you generate revenue now?
Currently, all revenue is generated through the sales of my own products with my own designs on them, through a multitude of different channels, online, wholesale, in person, and some freelance projects. I really don't take on any sort of art projects anymore because after I realized that I could go to do markets on weekends and like make more or almost as much as I made in a whole month in one weekend selling my own products, I stopped doing artwork for other people because I was like, well, if I sell my artwork to other people, that's a potential like money I could be selling my own stuff. I'm like giving away like my number one selling designs and stuff. Like I have no idea what those are. So yeah, it's all generated through sales of products and then the occasional freelance, project. And then some, I have one royalty deal left and that's pretty much it.
So I just wanted to kind of like paint a picture of like where you've been to where you are now. Which is pretty darn epic.
From 32 to 42 was my biggest change. Like my phrase is like I was 32 broke and living at my parents' house, 42, owned my own business, have a wife and a kid, and I'm selling millions of dollars of products with my own stuff. So it's just like a 10-year gap. Obviously it was more before that too, but you know, you could have told me at 32 I'm sitting there in the basement at my parents' house, that at 42 I'd be at that position. And obviously I would have never believed that at all. I mean, I was washing dishes.
So you could imagine like a person who's listening to this right now, you know what they're thinking. Like, what did you do, Jimmy? Like, how did you make this flip?
I put it all on red and it hit. No, I mean, basically it's a slow, like my whole journey. Like anytime I talk about it, It's a slow build. I mean, I was struggling from 20 until basically 36, 37. But the big thing that changed my mind was just being able to make my own products and go out to a market on the weekends. And I think like my first one, I did like $500 to $800 that weekend. And for me, that was just extra money. And I was just like, holy, I was like, people want to buy my art. Where previously before that, like, I was in the design industry and all I was trying to get was like affirmation from other designers. And I wasn't the best and I'm definitely not the best. But like, I wasn't getting any feedback. And like, I was like, designers don't like my stuff. So I was like, obviously people hate my artwork. So I was just kind of lost there because I thought nobody liked my work. And then as soon as I started doing those markets and we do them every weekend, you know, then we started doing two a weekend, three a weekend. And then that's when I was really able to see that there was a market for my artwork on products. And there was a way to like change my whole life doing that.
So how are you picking these markets? Because the reason why I ask this is I'm coming from that early 2000 Johnny Cupcakes, Benny Gold, MTs, all of that stuff. I remember glimpsing Anderson around that time. I probably even glimpsed you. And didn't even realize because it was just
Blue Dreams.
Thing. Yeah, that was Blue Dreams. Exactly. That was such a like a huge and cool, like I almost cried when MTs died.
Yeah, me too. That's where I was getting all my business.
But I say that to say like I've done markets and I wasn't doing that. But I also know that I wasn't choosing the right market to go to. I was just picking any and every. How did you decide like the right place to go sell your stuff?
So exactly what you said, you know, the first year I was just Googling and I was doing anything and everything. I mean, I had no idea. I didn't know what markets would sell. Like, I mean, luckily I live in Denver, Colorado, where there's a million different types of markets. Like there's art festivals, there's beer festivals, there's quote unquote farmers markets, which these days aren't really farmers markets where they're selling products. You know, they're not selling produce, but they're selling products and stuff. So I just did one. I can't remember how I found out about it, to be honest. It was called Jackalope Art Fair.
Okay.
And then as soon as you do one, like, obviously there's a building full of your peers there that are doing the same thing. So like, you're like, hey, what are you doing next? You know? And, so you kind of start to hear through the grapevine of these different shows. And obviously like, you know, not every show is good. I always say if that's a path you want to go down, you probably have to do 5 to 10 because you're going to have ones that suck. We've been doing this since 2016 or 17, and we've had shows this year that have sucked. It's because it's a new show and we're trying it and we go there and we lose money. But it's like it's a game you have to play to find new markets. Like every year you're like, okay, we found 3 more really good ones. Let's add those to the list. And it's just like, as the year goes on, like all of a sudden your whole calendar is filled with really good events instead of all those stinkers. But like you have to do it. Like I've vended in bars. I've vended in restaurants where it's like me and another person and we're like sitting there and people are eating and they're just staring at you. It's really weird. Like I've vended in like music halls where people are there in a concert and I'm in the back and they're yelling and I'm like trying to hear what they're saying. Like I've vended in garages. I mean, it's just you try everything you can, you know. And that's the only way you can do it. Like as soon as you get into it, you'll hear more. And then you like Facebook groups are really good still to this day. You can look up like probably whatever town you live in. There's probably some local group that does like vending and stuff. There's a vending chat group or whatever. So yeah, man, it's a lot of practice, patience and perseverance because they're not all good and they're not all fun to do for sure.
That's awesome, bro. So in that low point, right, who would you say was kind of like, you know, the person that kind of held you down or persons? What kept you together to kind of like push through in that low point?
I think obviously like my parents were all awesome because they had a 32-year-old son that for all outside, you know, I was a loser at that time. If you wanted to count by what society judges a person by. So like obviously they believed in me and like gave me that opportunity, but really it was just like, what else am I good at? Like, what am I going to get paid more than just like a 9-to-5 to do? And like, what is the skill that I have? I don't know why I was so stubborn about it. Like I said, I'm not doing anything like amazing as far as the artwork. I just didn't know what else I was ever going to do that was going to lead me to any kind of a success outside of the normal jobs that I had taken. And those jobs were construction or washing dishes. So, like, obviously, the regular world was like, you're good for these two things, and that's it. So, yeah, it was just, I was really stubborn, and I get that from my family. But it was just like, what else am I going to do? I stopped talking about doing art because I just got tired of explaining to people, like, you know, I was washing dishes, like, for $10 an hour. So, like, people are like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm washing dishes. I didn't even talk about art because I just got tired of, like, defending it. But yeah, it was just like being real stubborn and I didn't know what else to do, and I had to draw every day, and I just couldn't stop creating. I knew it had to happen. And I definitely, like, the little, you know, every little step in success gave me more fuel to, like, okay, if I can do this and I can just quit my job one day a week, and then maybe I can do 2 days, then maybe I can quit it, you know, the whole way through. And it was just a slow, gradual grind. But yeah, man, living at your parents' house at 32, being broke, and washing dishes at your buddy's restaurant is, you know, not a fun place to be in. And I also, like, broke my arm when I was there because I was helping my dad put a roof on the house. So I, like, broke my right arm, have a plate in there. So that was the hand I used to draw. So yeah, it was just an added bonus.
That's just insane to me, though, because I think what happens a lot of times is someone sees Atomic Child. They see Atomic Child and see how big it is. All that's going on. It looks sick. It looks cool. And they jump in and they want your results when the minute they jump in, not knowing, like, what you had to go through to even get to right here, the perseverance.
Yeah. I feel like that's everybody with success. Like, even probably some of the most successful people, like, there's 10, 25, 8 years of, you know, really not a lot of fun. Not a lot of people thinking you're going to make it. Like, people questioning you. You're like, what are you doing with your life? Like, you're an adult and you're, you know, I was in my 30s. Making less than $50,000, and, like, you know, that can sound like a lot until you're an adult, and then you know, like, cars,
where house. Did it go?
Yeah, especially, I mean, this was, you know, 15 years ago, so now it's even harder, just depending where you live. But
right.
Yeah, it's definitely nobody wants to hear. I mean, that's when I talk, like, I just try to talk about the before times, because, like, obviously there's a whole different talk I could do now about success and running a business, but it's like, what are people going to connect with? You know, everybody has that period if they're not in it now, or if they've just decided to move on to a different career, but everybody has that period of where it just sucks. And you're like, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. Nobody likes me. Nobody likes my work. I get no attention. I get no likes. Nobody cares, you know, like, yeah, man. I mean, that's everybody. I think everybody has that in them.
And I think that matters, though, in just in anything in life. So me and my wife, we're part of, like, this, we help lead, like, a marriage group, right? Mm-hmm. And it matters to hear that other people are going through the same thing that you're going through. So even with you saying this, like, someone hearing it's like, oh, okay, it's not just me, or it wasn't just me that went through this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, for sure. I feel like maybe with social media now, that's a little easier to find that story, but it's also harder because everybody usually posts their grand slam home runs. You know, nobody's like, I had to sit this game out because I missed the bus or whatever. You know? yeah, for sure. I think growing up. And just even in my 20s, like, there wasn't, you know, social media was way, there wasn't any social media, first of all. But it was just like, there was no way to connect with anybody on, like, the hard part of the career. And, like I said, it was all just home runs. You're like, oh, that guy is on the New Yorker, or this person has done this or this. So when people talk, and a lot of people don't do this anymore, but almost every kind of a talk back then was a portfolio review. Yeah. They were just basically like, here's my best stuff that I've done for the last decade. Go out there and do it, kids. You know, you're just like, how foreign is that to, like, a 20-year-old kid who's just getting out of college? You're like, what? Like, I'm going to have a book and then cover the New Yorker. And yeah, it was just completely unreachable and unattainable, you know?
And it's crazy, even at that time, that's the good thing about social media. You'll catch someone when they're at their midpoint or, you know what I mean? Or right about to hit that skyrocket. Yeah. Back then, it was even worse. You're seeing these people when they've already become either mainstream or pretty darn close to being mainstream, which is a whole nother level.
Yeah. There was no, like, there was definitely no in between. It was just like when you saw somebody, they were the top of the game and they were like, they were in a book already. And you're like, I can't even draw a hand, you know? Like, you know, it's just like, what do you do?
It's so true.
You can't really draw hands, but you know.
Listen, one of my I don't like drawing hands. It's one of the most
hardest because we see them every day. So you're like, I know what a hand is.
It's annoying, actually. All right, so that basically you're saying that, of course, it's clear you had some struggles, but there was no fear that Jimmy had to overcome.
Fear. I mean, obviously not like fear for my life or something like that. You know, actual fears that people in this world have to live through. Right. But if you want to talk about design fears, yeah, I mean, there was plenty of like at being a 30-year-old adult and like thinking, you know, there was all that stuff. But I just didn't let it overwhelm me. Like I had like dreams about like, oh, if I started a brand and I reached a certain point, like my whole life would be different and all that stuff. And I think one of the biggest things I probably learned was that every milestone that I like had in my mind where like I would be like, oh, if I hit this thing, I reach this level and my life will change. Whereas every one time I've hit one of those, my life hasn't changed and it's just the same. And you're like, I guess I just got to keep going.
Well, right.
You know, like,
it's true. It's true.
Especially when I worked in band merch, I learned that a lot. Like I worked for every big band you could think of name. And, you know, all that ever led to me was more work that nobody knew about. Nobody knew who I was. I mean, I did posters for like the Grateful Dead for their final tour and they sold who knows how many thousands, hundreds of thousands, whatever they sold. And I got paid $500. $500. Got a box of them up in the thing still because I don't know what to do with them.
Oh my gosh. That's real right there, boy. That's real.
Yeah, I mean, it never stops. You reach these things. And I mean, I guess maybe it reaches some point where you have maybe millions of dollars. I don't know. I've never been there. But I would assume, as people probably listen to this as a creatives, like you look at stuff and you're just like two, you know, maybe a month or a day or 10 seconds. You're like, that's terrible. I got to do something. You know, like it's just a never ending pursuit, you know,
especially as creatives, like you look at your work for a long enough after a while, you're like, I got to tweak.
Well, that's the weird changes. Part about a brand too, is like, as it gets more successful, like this is a design I did in 2016 or 17 and it's a really successful design. I like it, but like I've had to stare at this thing now for like 8 years or five or whatever it is. And like, normally you never have to do that. So that's another weird part too.
Yeah. So how do you kind of, and you still just kind of ride with it because it's successful?
Yeah, I'm all like, I think a lot of brands, like they're seasonal. So they're like new season, you know, put new stuff out, which we do that a little bit, but I'm more about like putting stuff out when I feel like it, making new things when I want, and just finding like evergreen designs, especially in the industry that I'm in. We're in the resort world. And I'm sure most people who are listening to us have been to some sort of national park or a town around a national park. And
gotcha.
Let me tell you, those people sell those designs until they don't make 1 cent on those things. So you can do a design in that industry, and if it's a top seller, I mean, it can sell for so long because most people are like going there, buying a thing, and they never go back there, right? It's always new people. It's not like a mall where like the same people usually are visiting every weekend and they're like, well, I'm not going to buy anything. I was just here. Nothing's new. So they have to do new stuff, where kind of the resort world that we're in, you can have a lot of evergreen designs and they can live a long time.
And you know, that's interesting. So that's kind of like, you feel like that's kind of your niche somewhat?
Definitely. I mean, my whole brand is based around nature and being outside and drawing nature. Nature doesn't have hands. Perfect. So yeah, I mean, that's the niche we're in. You know, we're in kind of resort souvenir shops. Mm-hmm. We also obviously sell in our store, but a lot of our big wholesale accounts are those type of places where people go, destination vacation places.
Sweet. So I'm curious, how did you land your first wholesale shop or
contract? So the very first one was either the first or second market I did, and it was just a local shop. And at the time, that was amazing because like nobody had ever once approached me before and they're like, hey, we want to carry your stuff in a store. So that was really how that happened, was just at a market. And a lot of those local markets that you do, there's stores in your town that want to sell new products and they want to get new stuff in. So they'll go to those things. And that was kind of my first few like small local mom and pop stores, was all just networking in person. I mean, even to this day, like, you know, just going to that creative conference, like the networking you can do there and that short time versus like having to network, like me and you would have never probably crossed paths. If it was, it would have been a lot longer. Mm-hmm. Whereas we live two completely different lives. We're in different states, different parts of the country. And it's like, we go there and, you know, now we meet. So it's like, I think networking in real life is still the most important tool for any creator, designer. You know, it's just, you never know what those connections can be.
100%. And even just speaking of that, like, even just us hanging out, going out to eat, like, that was just so much fun. I think we probably laughed so much.
Yeah, that was hilarious. That was great.
But I'm just saying, like, that in itself, that's like when networking is at its best.
Yeah. Obviously, like, when you put yourself out there, you know, you got to be ready for rejection because it's just a numbers game. 100%. And, you know, some people either don't care or just don't have time, or they've talked to a million people and they're just like, they don't want to talk to you. Or, you know, in person, that can be a little more awkward, and that doesn't happen as much because, you know, maybe, you know, American get a bad rap sometimes, but most people are still pretty polite to your face. Now, sure, whether how they say that behind your back or not, but most people are still in our country pretty polite to your face. So, yeah.
No, that's true. Like, and even with the whole, I love that you brought up the whole rejection deal. I think people see a person like you talk about networking, a person like me, but we go through these rejections. But it's just like, you just brush your shoulder off and look for the next person that's willing to say, hey, what's up?
Yeah, and I think too with rejection, it's like anything. The first 10 times, you're like, it's super like personal, and you're like, ugh. But like, once you've been rejected 30 times, you're just kind of like, whatever, you know? Like, it's just, I mean, I've done so many markets, and like people have said such wild stuff to my face, not knowing that I'm the person who draws it, or I'm the business owner. But now I'm just like, whatever, I've heard it all. Like, I've had people walk up to me and be like, who draws this stuff and why would anybody buy it? You know, and like, I've had people like flip me off because I didn't give them like a paper bag or something. Like, I've had everything happen in those markets. So now I'm just like, whatever. Okay. It's not me. What can I do?
That's true. I love that. All right. So let's get some fun questions. What's that thing you can't live without that's not your phone?
My computer, I guess. Besides my family.
You gotta get the politically correct answer.
Computer, sugar.
Sugar. I love that. I'll take that. I love that. Because that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for those odd answers. I've heard blankets. I've heard like a record player, like Hawk Rattle. I remember when I had him on the podcast. He was like, there's one thing he can't live without, his record player.
Yeah. I mean, food addiction for sure. Love food.
Kind of important.
The car ride that takes way too long and you didn't have to drive in the car and then you drive around.
Are you a big road trip person?
I haven't done really too many road trips. If I'm not having to drive, yes, I hate driving. I hate driving so much. I can't wait for self-driving cars. But yeah, I mean, we did like a really cool road trip. Like right when I graduated college, we drove up to the Pacific Northwest and that was really awesome. Okay. I mean, road trip's all about the people you're with, right? Unless you want to go by yourself like a maniac.
No, thanks. We're big road trip people. We like renovated a van and all the whole deal.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we've driven the furthest we've driven, because as you know, we're like southeast. We've driven to Utah.
Oh, okay, that's a drive.
Which took forever. But it was an adventure indeed. But we did enjoy road trips.
For sure.
I just feel like your brand just makes you come off as a road trip person.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I love the outdoors and all that, but like as soon as I started doing this, I don't go outside hardly ever now. Like, you know, like I come to work, I'm doing this. Not, I mean, I do events and stuff, but I don't get a lot of personal time, especially with like a 2-year-old. Like,
yeah.
I don't get to do a lot of the camping and hiking stuff that I used to for sure.
Okay. Sweet. All right. Book recommendations.
I'm going to be one of those people who doesn't read books.
Okay. I'll take that. All right. So no book recommendations. All right. Sweet. All right. So if you were to start your brand today, what is two of the things that you would do?
First, I would legally change my name to Kardashian. And then I'd be rich.
It's not a real thing. Possible, first of all.
I mean, if I started it today, I would do probably the exact same thing. If I had the same knowledge, I would hit it harder. I would hit social media way harder. I, like most people, for the first maybe 5-8 years of using Instagram when it was kind of the be all end all, use it as a personal blog. You know, here's my pizza, here's my pen, whatever dumb stuff, how it used to be. Choose the 4 filters. Ooh, this one's great. You know? And then boom, you're done. But I would definitely take that way more seriously. I would post every day. I would post stories every day now. I think this day and age, while your products and your artwork and all that is really important, I think the person being able to connect with you, the owner, is the most important thing. Because this day and age, that's the only thing that's really hard to replicate is who you are.
Right.
Anybody can replicate my style of art. It's not that complicated. But to be connected to me, creating the brand is more powerful than probably the products that it creates, just because there's only one of me, and it's kind of you know, not that I'm that unique. I'm a fat white guy with a beard and a hat. Whoa, only one of those. Especially in design, right? You didn't see me. But you know, you have to be uniquely you is basically the thing you can hone in on. So I would just treat social media like a business way sooner, or as a tool way sooner than I kind of figured that out.
Okay. Sweet. I love that. All right. So what's the first hour of your day like?
These days, just wake up, you know, whether it's my turn to wake up with the child or not. Take a shower, get dressed, and go to work. Drive takes about half hour, so that's what I do. I usually don't eat breakfast or anything. I just wake up, get ready, and come to work. I'm lucky enough to no longer have to use an alarm clock. I don't wake up mad about where I'm going. Mondays don't matter. The weekends don't matter. Whereas in my previous life, I had an alarm clock, and I had a couple snoozes, and I let them all go off, and I was just like, maybe I won't have to go in today. You know, like that was my life. So I feel real lucky where I am now. So I'm like, I wake up, I'm happy, and I just get to do what I love. So
what's your wake up time? Or it just kind of fluctuates?
It fluctuates, but technically I have to be here by 9, but I know the boss pretty well. So, you know, we used to only have to be here at 10, but I was like, man, starting 10 is kind of late in the day. So I mean, we work, you know, 9 to 4 every day, and then we're open Monday through Thursday. Okay. And the big reason I do that is just when I had a regular 9-to-5 job, whenever I could get a Friday off and have like 3 days off, I was like, oh, I have a life. You know, it's not just Saturday and then you spend all Sunday going, I got to work on Monday. So everybody has 3 days off so that while this is my life, it doesn't have to be their life.
I love that. Love that. That's pretty cool. Pretty cool. So what's next for Jimmy?
You know, I don't know where this train is going, but I'm games? Just – what was that?
Games.
We made a little game.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Made a little fun game for like email and stuff and just kind of see where that goes. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know how big like a brand has to get to where somebody else cares, to where like somebody else is interested in it, or if that happens. Or, but I mean, like, my long term goal is to really, just being in charge of the most amount of revenue that we make, so that the revenue that we're making is just off of our website or direct to in person events that we do, so that we can control that, and that we can just kind of do whatever we want. Whereas right now we make a lot of our revenue from wholesale, which is great, but it's hard and it's a game. Wholesale can just go away at any time. So, you know, really just to be in control of the brand and see where that takes me. Like, I like the business side now, and I just want to see how far it grows or how big it can get and see where that takes me.
That's freaking awesome, man. I love it. I love it. All right. So what advice you would give for someone that is a creative, either trying to do their own thing or have something doing on the side? What advice would you have for them?
Read some books. Don't be a creative. I think you just have to realize. I mean, like, I think graphic design these days, there's a lot of like, there's a lot more like blue collar regular jobs in that than like when I started. It was still very like high end. So there's a lot of like jobs out there for that. They're not fun or anything, but there's a lot of jobs to have in that. I just think like, don't be afraid to take one of those jobs that sucks, even if it's just like laying out signs at a print shop. And you're going to learn more at that job than you learned in school. And like, that'll teach you, like, you either like that or you don't like that. Mm-hmm. So get out there in the real world. It's going to take time. You know, 1% or less of us create something and it takes off right away and we're super successful the rest of our life. The rest of us, regular people, it's a long journey. It sucks. It's hard. But if you love something, you know, you're gonna ride it out. So just be consistent. If you want to sell products, go sell locally. Be consistent. Post on social media. Start small. Don't jump into a lot of debt.
I love that. I don't jump into a lot of debt.
Same.
Me too.
I got a $4,000 credit card. The first time I was like, print them all. You know, I'm gonna sell them.
And then womp womp. Like, just to have a real conversation, like, that's what kind of, like, just killed my spirit earlier on, around that time. Like, I was in New York, and, like, it was just easier to sell products in New York, especially in, like, 2007, 2008. It was just so easy. I moved to Georgia, and everything was just so spread out. Didn't have a great network. I didn't grow up in Georgia. Yeah. And the inventory was just sitting on the shelves, and I was just like,
yeah. And then, like, you know, your friends and family buy everything, and then you're like, well, now it's only people I don't know.
So it's just kind of, I definitely learned a lot, you know what I mean? But it was definitely one of the things that if I was to do again, I would really not romanticize with a lot of this.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many things that look great on the outside, but when you start doing it, like, now it's so easy, like, at least to start, not to grow and be successful, but to start. And just, like, sharing, just starting, like, without inventory, you can do now with, like, apps on Shopify and stuff. You can have, either one of us could start a new store in 10 minutes. But the whole thing is we wouldn't have an audience to send them to, and then, it's just like everything else. So,
yeah,
growing the audience is the most important thing. Audience, fans, followers, friends, whatever word you want to choose for customer, it's all about growing that, being sincere, and trying to grow that audience sincerely so that they'll follow you, you know, forever. There's like some saying about if you can get to like 1,000 loyal fans that'll like buy your stuff whenever you drop it, then you've kind of have made it to the point where they'll at least pay for your, you know, a normal life.
Love that. Sweet. So where can people go to find you and learn more about you?
The biggest thing these days is we're trying to grow our YouTube and let people know that we have one that's like documenting our full journey. So let's just go to YouTube, type in Atomic Child, and we'll come up and just subscribe. The first video on there is me, you know, 5 or 6 years ago sitting in that little apartment room where I started this whole thing. And it's just like a 35-second video on my iPhone or whatever. And I'm like, I'm going to start a blog about the creative journey, you know? And so it's like, that's the first video. So you can see that, and then you can kind of see the whole story through there.
That's cool, man. I love that. That's so cool. Love a lot of what you're doing. Love your story.
Thank you.
It's just a great testament of just perseverance.
Yeah.
Which patience, I think, is like such a valuable thing in doing anything. Perseverance is just a valuable thing.
Yeah. It's hard, you know? Yeah. Everything in society will go against that idea if you're chasing something and you're not super successful. So you have to persevere through all that.
Dude, this has been awesome. I'm so glad you came on, man. It's been a
long overdue.
Yeah, for sure.